Accession number 22342, Reel 11.
Trooper Bowdler, Reel 11.
Earlier on we were discussing the availability of water in the box. What about stronger drinks? Were there any of those available?
Fortunately there was, yes. It was only while we were in action that I learned of this, that you were entitled to a ration, a rum. And rum used to come down on the end of a parachute to absolute delight in stone jars padded with wicker or what have you, and it was issued to the crew, each individual tank. Somebody would come round with one of these jars and dole it out.
Was that on a daily basis?
Do you know, I can't remember. I think it was an unavailability basis, really.
So when it dropped in, it was issued.
Yeah, when it dropped, it was issued. If there wasn't any, you didn't get any. So, but it was jolly welcome, I can tell you. And fortunately, at least two members of my crew didn't drink the stuff at all. They couldn't stand it. Other stuff, yes, they could drink, but Nilgiri beer and stuff like that. But rum, no, they didn't like it. So I fortunately had their ration, and I've seen many a long sleepless night through with a enamel mug full of rum. Beautiful, absolutely beautiful, and I got a taste for it then, and I've loved it ever since. And I have woods and pusses in my sideboard now, and I have a nip every so often, and brings back old memories.
Something else which soldiers sometimes rely on to keep them awake when they're really very tired indeed is tobacco. Was that a way in which you could keep yourself awake?
Yeah, but we didn't, because the situation that we were in, the smell of tobacco, it travelled like mad, you know, and smoke and that sort of thing. Lighting up and all that sort of thing, so it was pretty well forbidden most of the time, smoking. But at that time I did smoke myself, and I smoked a pipe, and thoroughly enjoyed it, and tobacco and cigarettes did come up with the rations, yes, from time to time.
You're saying that the American K rations contained
cigarettes. They contained a small pack of cigarettes. I think you had one or two cigarettes and three or four matches in each ration pack. They were cleverly put together, the American ration, and certainly impressed me. But I found them boring after a time.
You were saying also when you were going over the pass, going out of the area of the box.
Yes.
You were going up from the side of the box, and other squadrons of the regiment were coming up from the other side.
That's right.
Were they also having to fight their way up against
the
opposition?
Yes, the 5th Division, as it was, still the 5th Division on that side of the mountain. They had to fight their way to the top. We had to fight our way to the top. And one of my enduring memories is of stopping for a bite to eat, sort of halfway up the pass, I suppose it was. And there was all hell going on around us, and I got out of the tank because we were stationed. There was a roadblock or something, and we couldn't make any progress because it was all line of stone stuff, as you appreciate.
It's a one tank width.
And so I took the opportunity to stop and have a biscuit and whatever else I'd got, and at the side of the road, I leaned my back against what I thought was a charred tree stump. And I got this awful smell of death, you know, a familiar smell by that time. And I thought, my God, there's a dead body around here somewhere. And it was then I realised I was leaning on the back, I was leaning my back on the leg of a man who was burnt to a char. And I was leaning on his leg. He was laying back like that, dead. And I was leaning on his leg. That was the most alarming experience. Terrible.
Was he Japanese or British?
No way of telling.
No way of telling.
No way of telling.
He's too badly charred.
Yes, it was just a dead body.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh dear. I didn't have much appetite for food after that, I can assure you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But eventually we got to the top.
Mm.
And I tell you, the feeling of relief as we came out of that box area was so profound. I shall never forget the feeling. God, I made it, you know. Got through it.
Another chance. Another chance.
Another chance, yes.
Mm. Yeah, I think you were saying that you had specialist tanks with you that were driven by Royal Engineers, bulldozer tanks.
I assume that, yes.
What about, did you have any engineers on foot for mine clearing? And
there were mine clearance squads, which in certain instances we came across. On the occasion that I told you, I ran over a mine with my tank.
A gelignite sandwich,
gelignite banjo.
Yes.
And it didn't go off.
Mm.
Why, I don't know. But what I'd done is I'd run over it and then turn my tank because of a bend in the road or something. And in the sideways movement of my tank, like that.
Yes, swivelling it right to
left.
It scooped
the thing out.
Yes.
And there it lay.
So it was uncovered and unearthed by your movement.
Unearthed by my tank wrench, you see. And that was a bit of a shock. And it was a bit of a shock to the guys who were supposed to have detected it, I suppose.
Mm.
Anyway, they were going in front. In actual fact, it was on the road, you heard me previously mention Boothadong.
Yes.
It was on the road to the attack on Boothadong that this happened.
Mm.
Yeah. And they were supposed to be clearing the road, the track in front of us. And, I suppose they can't get every one. But
how were they doing that? Did they have mine detectors?
Yes, they did. They had mine detectors, yes.
Mm.
They went backwards and forwards.
Sweeping.
Mm. Yeah. And every so often they'd fork one up. These things didn't go off unless there was a heavy weight put on them.
Mm.
But they could, they could ruin a tank if they exploded. Gelignite banjos. They also had another anti-tank weapon, I remember, which a friend of mine and I discovered when the hill immediately in front of us, the one that had been giving us all the trouble while we were in the box, after it was cleared of Japs, my friend and I walked up there with our revolvers drawn in case and took a look at the positions. No dead bodies about, no Japs, they'd all been taken away. But we found dressings and things like that, and an anti-tank mine. Now it consisted, when we saw it, we realised what it was. It was a sort of canvas bag full of explosives, circular canvas bag full of explosives, and a fuse thing on the outside, a bit like the plunger for the hand grenade, so you could tap it on your ear. And it had four magnets sewed onto it. The idea was that they could throw these at the tank.
Oh.
And they would stick on, punch a hole through the tank. Well, we picked this up and took it back to Squadron HQ. Mm. Gave it to him and said, look, this is what we found. And that altered things almost straight away. The an order went out that all the rest of the squadron were to go into the mobile workshops and have a cage fitted over them. So then we were running around with these look like chicken coops on the back of our tanks, built on there. Now they found that by this mine that we brought in, and they got others as well, and they tried them on a tank, and they found that if you put it on the front or the side of the tank, it created a lot of discomfort but didn't actually penetrate. But if it was put on the top of the tank, it was thrown onto the top of the tank, it blew a hole in the tank and a hole in the ground underneath the tank, a crater. So it was a very focused charge and quite a dangerous weapon. So as I say, we ended up with chicken wire across the top of the tank. So these
things, like a grenade screen.
Yes, these things would hit and bounce off.
Yes. It sounds really rather more like the British sticky bomb than a mine, though, if you had to throw it onto the tank.
Well, of course, being Japanese, the object of the exercise was to run up to the tank and slap it on
in person. Yes.
You know, you didn't throw it. But fortunately, we were never subject to it.
Mm.
I mean, I suppose these wire netting things did save quite a few.
Mm.
But it was something I think that they brought in quickly once they discovered that tanks were there. Because our tanks were a complete surprise to the Japs.
It does sound like an improvised weapon.
Yes. Mm. Yes, our tanks were a complete surprise to the Japs. They had no idea that we had them. And great secrecy had been employed to get us there.
Yes.
You know, we arrived in the dead of night. All the aircraft noise and that to cover our movements and that sort of thing. And I think it must have been quite a shock to them to find them.
Mm.
Especially tanks like that. I mean, they had such enormous firepower. They were incredible.
You got to the top of the pass, and what happened then? You went down the other side, presumably.
Yes, we went down the other side and got into our old harbour where we originally landed, which was, of course, dense jungle, but quite safe because the Japs were, by then, pushed well away. Tortoise had been taken by other squadrons and the infantry, and so we were quite safe. But so we did our maintenance and all that sort of thing, and then because the battle as far as we were over was over, the battle as far as we were concerned was over, our part in it was complete, and we were withdrawn.
And had you had many casualties during the fighting?
Surprisingly light. I can't remember what they were, but you know, I remember the people that died.
Yes.
But how many there were, I couldn't tell you. But at the time, considering what we went through, our casualties were extremely light.
Did you have replacements coming up to
No.
bring you back up to strength?
No. No, and in fact, when we got out and into the jungle strip again, they found that the only way, they weren't prepared to take us off by boat, LST, in the way that we came in. So, what we did was go down the beach, in squadron formation, down the beach on sand. And that brings me to another part of my story, that having avoided any wounds or anything like that, on the first day out and on our journey down the beach, we stopped for the night, and everyone couldn't wait to just jump into the sea and have a bath. And it was lovely clear water, beautiful sandy beach, backed by a jungle, of course. And I think the whole of the squadron must have gone in front of me, because I was a bit late doing it. We were advised to keep our plimsolls on, sort of running shoes, pumps, while swimming, because there were some very nasty things in the sea, like weaver fish, which could sting you and that sort of thing, and stingrays. Well, I was fiddling about putting these things on, and the rest of the squadron had gone leaping into the sea, into the surf ahead of me, and were thoroughly enjoying themselves. I ran down the beach, dived in, and was thoroughly enjoying myself, when all of a sudden I got hit by a stingray in the foot, in the ankle. The pain was absolutely excruciating. It struck me in this foot, the left-hand side. The sting went through my plimsolls, through the side of the plimsoll, and into my ankle. And it was very much like an electric shock. And I went up out of the water, and I could see this long sort of tail thing leaving my foot. And I struggled back up the beach, feeling the poison going up my leg. And I was dead worried, because I thought I was going to die. Anyway, I got back to the tank, crawled back up the beach. The rest of them heard me scream, and I did scream. It was very, very painful. I got back to the tank and opened the first aid box and gave myself a shot of morphine. Now, I must have been in pretty bad state to do that, because I hate needles, and injecting myself was the last thing I would do. Anyway, I did this, and I gave myself a shot of morphine, which killed the pain. And I went into my bed, which was just a bedding roll on the beach, you know, and a mosquito net under the toilet. Crawled in, and out I went. I passed out. Mm. Next morning, I awoke feeling absolutely fine, until I went to stand on my feet. I collapsed again. Mm. What had happened was the sting had broken off in the wound, and it was turning septic.
Well, it had started turning septic overnight.
Pardon?
It had started turning septic overnight.
Must have done.
Mm.
Starting to. Anyway, it got worse and worse, and I could no longer drive, so somebody else had to take over my job, and I was put on the back of the tank, over the engine, stinking hot with the sun beating down, and it was terrible. What a terrible journey that was. Anyway, they got me to a field hospital.
Had you been to the RAP at all?
The
Regimental Aid Post?
I don't think we had one.
You hadn't got one with you?
There must have been some medics in the outfit.
Mm.
But I don't recall ever going there. No, what happened was that when we reached a certain spot...
Yes, got to field hospital.
Yeah. I was put in a 3-ton lorry and driven to a field hospital, where I was given the old-fashioned, the anaesthesia.
Yes.
In other words, the gauze thing was put over the nose, presumably. And they dripped chloroform on it. It was as crude as that.
Mm.
And out I went. Next thing I remember was recovering and thinking somebody dug a ploughshare into my foot.
Mm.
Anyway, they said, the medic said, you've been extremely lucky. You were on your last legs when you came in, because of the delay in getting it done.
Yes.
And he said it was a stingray sting, and it had broken off in the wound, which was why it turned septic so quickly. Anyway, I had to go to another hospital from there. That was emergency surgery, obviously.
Mm.
And I then had to go up the Brahmaputra River on a paddle steamer. And whilst waiting for this thing to take me to where I'd got to go, I sat by the side of the Brahmaputra watching things and looking at the mudskippers. Now, these are funny little fish. They can actually climb trees, mangrove roots and things like that, with their flippers. and they're fascinating to watch. And the wildlife along the banks of the Brahmaputra River had to be seen to be believed, you know. Hornbills and things like that, things I've never seen before. Mm. And then I got onto this paddle steamer full of chickens and natives and all sorts of things. And I was driven up to, I think it was Camilla. I think it was a base, a medical, a field hospital in Camilla. And given medical treatment there.
What sort of treatment did they give you once you got to Camilla?
Well, it was continual. The dressings had to be changed very frequently. And the wound swabbed out. I had a drain in the wound. They hadn't stitched it up completely.
Mm.
They put a drain in. And that had to be attended to. And I suppose I was on summer medication. I think it was, at that time, sulfinamide drugs were all the rage. Mm. So I rather suspect that's what I was having.
Penicillin hadn't come in yet, had it?
No, penicillin. Mm. And I remember on this paddle steamer, I got very curious because it was an old paddle steamer and it was built in Scotland, shipped out to Burma by the builders. And the guy that accompanied it to set it up and assemble it and commission it was a Scot. He'd stayed on. And there he was, down in the engine room. Oh. He had his bottle of scotch or rice wine or whatever it was. And he was quite content with that life, all on his own.
Keeping the thing going.
With his lovely ship. Mm. And I tell you, every bit of brass down there shone and sparkled. And I had a long chat with him. And he loved the life. He wouldn't do anything else. He completely abandoned his place in Scotland. Mm-hmm. He wasn't in the services or anything like that. He was a civilian.
Mm-hmm.
But he was the typical Scot engineer.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And it was thrilling to meet him and see the way he kept that boat.
Did you have anyone looking after you while you were on the paddle steamer?
No, I was on my own.
You were on your own?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was on my own. And but to go up the Brahmaputra on a paddle steamer, what you see on the banks, you know, crocs and all sorts of things, wildlife. When we got to Camilla, that was a fairly big field hospital, which was full of wounded, genuinely wounded people with limbs blown off and that sort of thing. And I was put in a ward with these people, you know, and some of the tank crews found their way there and they were terribly burnt. That was the usual fate of a tank crew, to get burnt. And there were some terrible sights in there. And I counted myself very, very lucky to be in there with what I'd got, although it nearly caused my death. It nearly killed me. But I was in there for, I suppose, 4 or 5 weeks. Then I was discharged and had to find my way back to Calcutta, and from Calcutta to my unit. I couldn't wear boots. I had plimsolls on.
Was it still swollen?
The plimsolls, eh?
Mm. Was it still swollen?
Oh yeah,
the left foot.
And it still hurt. Mm. You know, I mean, it was still hurt. It was still having dressings on.
Mm.
But I got back to Calcutta eventually, by hook or by crook, and I can't remember how I did it. I had to find my own way there, and I had travel warrants, obviously, from the hospital. And when I got to Calcutta, I then had to find my unit. They had gone down to Kokonada, where we had a base that we'd been in before we went into action. And so I had to get back to Kokonada, which was also quite a struggle. Anyway, I'd lost my place in the tank crew, obviously. Somebody else had taken that over. But I did get back eventually by virtue of a number of transit camps and what have you. It's amazing what you can do when you have to. You're on your own and nobody believes you. You know, you should say, I'm from so-and-so. And they want proof. Incidentally, I was seized upon by the military police in Calcutta for walking down Chowringhee, which is the main street, in Plimsolls, and I was put on a charge.
What happened to that?
Well, when I got back to my unit, the squadron leader, I was on a charge. He called me up and said, tell me what the charge was. You know, you were walking down Chowringhee improperly dressed. And I said, well, I had no option. I was excused boots. I couldn't do anything else. He said, well, didn't you have any paperwork to say that you were... No, I said, no. They just said, don't wear boots. Use your plimsolls. Because they were medical people. They weren't military people. And I thought that was a bit tough. And I told the police when they arrested me. I said, look, I've just come out of action. I said... I don't know what this is all about. I said, I've come out of hospital, I've been excused boots, and they said, well, where's the document? I said, I haven't got any documents. They said, right, well, you're on a charge. And it did. The charge found its way through the system to my unit, and my squadron leader had me up, and he said, I've got to punish you. Because of it's entered in the military police records. But he gave me the lightest possible sentence he could, which was, I don't know, confined to camp or something. I didn't want to go anywhere anyway, so it didn't hurt, which was rather nice of him. But he'd been with me in action, so there was no way he was going to be hard on me. But I thought that was a bit much.
Military police could have inquired at the hospital, couldn't they?
They could have done, I suppose, yes. But you know what they are in the military. I mean, they want documentary evidence and God knows what.
Mm.
In any case, probably at the hospital, they could. The guy who said, go home and excuse boots, probably wouldn't have remembered you. They get so many cases through there. With all sorts of problems. So, you know, I didn't hold it against anyone. It was just bad luck. I looked upon it as bad luck. Anyway, when we got back to camp, I found that things were underway. Oh, by the way, we left our tanks in the jungle. We came to a point...
Was that after you had been evacuated?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. They got so far along the coast,
right,
and then found they could get no farther because they had to cross rivers,
yeah,
estuaries, so they couldn't do it. No vessels available to take the tanks off, so they were driven into the jungle, disabled, and left to rot. And to my knowledge, they're there to this day because it was very, very dense jungle, wild. And that's where the squadron tanks ended up. They were never brought out. And the squadron was sent back to Coconada, as I say, and the whole regiment eventually foregathered there.
Mm.
And the next thing we heard was that we were under consideration for invasion.
Invasion of where?
One of the Japanese held islands. I think it was I think it was Malaya. I think we were going to attack Malaya.